My friend John Musgrave, he's an author, he's a historian, and he's my guest this morning. John, how are you, buddy? Happy Thanksgiving.
I'm doing good.
Happy Halloween, I should say, I think. Hey, John, he wrote a book, which is going to come up here in a couple of moments, because it's integral to story number one, Halloween in Southern Illinois and Haunted Houses. First, the Slave House, or what's called the Old Slave House. John, I literally grew up just down the road from it, literally. When people and family would come to visit, we went to the Old Slave House. And the story about how you couldn't stay on the, I believe, top floor. And that's where I want to start with you this morning. But before I do that, I want to mention how, as I look back on that time, how seriously this story was taken. You can't do it. If you're a media organization, you're an author, you're welcome to come and try. And it was taken so seriously. I look back on that with a little, maybe embarrassment, I'm not sure.
Back in 1978, WEHT-TV Channel 25 in Evansville actually brought in Ed and Lorraine Warren to the house. And they were there for about 3 hours, and they conducted an exorcism, according to the owner, upstairs. One of the newspapers, the Gallatin Democrat, mentioned that they came to the house to investigate, and Mrs. Warren was convinced that the house was, quote, heavy with phenomena. This is the couple that you saw portrayed in the Conjuring movie. They're the couple that investigated Amityville. And this is a time period, this is right after the Amityville horror book has come out, but just before the movie. This was in September of 1978, and then the following month, that's when Dave Rogers from Channel 3, WSIL-TV, spent the night, and may have been one of the first people who spent the night upstairs, basically reading Battlestar Galactica and trying to avoid any ghostly thoughts that might have been taking place.
Yeah, and this is interesting. Because I was around and broadcasting in Harrisburg during this time period. And once again, I think you just helped me reiterate how seriously this was taken. This Conjuring group, I remember them coming in with the Evansville TV, because it was a big story. We were talking about it every doggone hour. And then the guy who successfully, because you'd had all this string of people who said, no, I didn't. And, you know, what's interesting is during this time period, I had visited the house with grandma and granddad and family and gone upstairs and saw this place. This is a place nobody can. And I'm like, what's the deal? It looks like an attic, you know. But once the sun sets, you had all this. Well, at the same time, I can remember being there at the location and finding a shoebox in one of the garages or adjacent building with human bones in it, and that was rather off-putting. But I guess it's the history of the house that lays this, I think, the term heavy. And it's an interesting history in which you authored a book.
Yes, Slave Salt, Sex, and Mr. Crenshaw, The Untold Story of the Old Slave House, and what appears to be the last station on the Reverse Underground Railroad still standing in the entire country. The house was built in 1838. John Hart Crenshaw was the owner. Crenshaw basically was kidnapping free black residents in the area and selling them into slavery. So just the opposite of what you think of when you hear the term Underground Railroad, he was taking them south. He was struck by an axe or was involved in an industrial accident and lost his leg. There's different stories about that. And when that happened, he moved into Equality in 1849. And for a few years, he did not live out on Hickory Hill, which is 2 miles east of Equality. During that time, in 1851, a German family moved into the house. And they lived there for a couple of years. And one of the kids was interviewed decades later. And she said the house was haunted. And this is interesting. Crenshaw is still living. He's just living a few miles away in Equality. She said the house was haunted because the neighbor said the house was haunted. They were adamant that it was haunted because they were hearing strange noises coming from the third floor. I find it fascinating that 1851 is also considered the high point for kidnappings in Gallatin County, according to the five county history published in 1887.
Right.
People were talking about what was going on at that house, and they were doing it in a way, you know, it wasn't safe to talk about this leading landowner and his kidnappings, but you could talk about the victims. You could talk, and you call them ghosts, and you can get away with it. And we see that in a couple other places. Potts End, which was just down Route 1, right into Hardin County. This was an early inn at a crossroads where you checked in but didn't always check out. Mr. Potts would take, you know, rich travelers, especially those who were traveling alone, go out to the spring and have a drink and get thumped over the head with a club.
Right.
And then they would bury them in the yard. This, I've come across stories with travelers coming through. The house is closed. And as far as we know, Potts may still be alive. But they're talking about they're talking about the area, and they're talking about how spooky it is and how it's so believable that the stories would be like that.
And it's interesting because, you know, I'm going to school in Harrisburg, right down the road from there, and they're telling us about slavery didn't exist in Illinois. Well, at the same time, we go around and drive anywhere, and you'll see them painted on the side of a barn, visit the old slave house.
Yeah.
It's interesting from that standpoint. And it's interesting because, you know, you had shared with me that I call it defensive semantics. We'll change the verbs we use and all the terms we use, so that we don't end up clobbered in a ditch somewhere. But we can talk about it in this context almost like it's a defensive mechanism. We use as a surrogate for talking about the truth. Now, there was another place, and I'm very vague on this, John, and I'm hoping you're able to help me. This was brought to attention of mine, a friend of mine in Murfreesboro, who does construction work and things along this line. And he says, he goes to church three times a week, my friend, right? This is not typical for him to tell me a story like this. He said, I'm working north of Carterville at an old railroad bridge. And this is where scabs are being brought in during the Bloody Williamson era. And the scab laborers are brought in by a train, stopped at a railroad track or trestle or bridge north of Carterville and hanged. He says, I've been there at sunset, and I've never been more terrified that something was here and going on. He says, it's a new experience to me, but I swear something's there. Do you know anything about this story?
You know, I think that is a story where they have combined various stories. Because one, I think it's a story that goes back to one of the Carterville riots. We've talked about before. There were three outbreaks of violence at the end of the 1800s in Cambria and Carterville when the UMWA was trying to organize Samuel Brush's mine north of town. One of them, they shot the train up, bringing in replacement workers, but that was pretty much at Cambria or just outside of Cambria. The second one was when the replacement workers attacked the union black workers closer to town. And then the third one was when the union attacked the replacement workers on the bridge bridge north of Carterville. So I think that may be the location, and that's one of the shootouts and where somebody died. Now, every once in a while, somebody will tell me a story of and be able to point out a place, and they'll be around Heron, and they'll say it's part of the Heron Massacre from 1922, and the location doesn't match. And I'm wondering, there's a whole series of violent acts that begin in 1929 and into the 30s between the United Mine Workers and the Progressive Mine Workers, and they're scattered all about the area.
Right.
And up to central Illinois. And that's what people remember. When I visited Potsdam one time with a local school teacher. In one sentence, she told a story, and it combined the violence of the harps killing some French foragers, hunters in 1799, then an incident that took place about 1807, and both of those predates Mr. Potts and Potts Inn, but then what Mr. Potts was doing, there was a murder there by soldiers during the Civil War, and then the last thing she included was something that she had seen herself along the state highway, so in her lifetime, so that would have been in the 1930s.
So melded all these three things together.
Yeah, it's like certain areas just draw that type of story because once something bad happens, something else probably has happened there as well. People, they get in that mindset, and this is what something had to have happened here because it's like no one ever talks about a haunted trailer.
Well, I can't be so sure about that.
Or a bungalow, although I have heard a story about a house.
I can tell you a story about a trailer. I can tell you about a trailer at Uncle Briggs that I'm pretty sure is haunted. But yeah. That'll be a story for another day, probably not broadcast either. A couple of notes here. One, before I let you go, because I've got a question for you. You've compiled a lot of these stories. I mean, one of the ones that more recent that I've experienced is the biking trail from Tunnel Hill, where people mysteriously fall over because they feel they're in a vortex. I mean, that's one of the ones, and I think that's a visual effect from going down a hill and something people say they literally fall over. But I was wondering, do you have a story that you've kind of picked up over time that we haven't talked about that you think is fascinating?
There's so many. I love the vortex stories because it's like, what's the history of this? And it's like the Max Creek Vortex. There is a Indian stone wall, stone fort, whatever you want to call it, on private property just above it, or maybe still on Forest Service property. But it's like, so here's a site that was, associated with the Indians. Jim Young, who was the late Jim Young, used to do the Waterman and Hill Traveler's Almanac, or Nature Almanac here in Southern Illinois. He wrote Blood. He wrote a book called Weird Egypt. He thought it was a connection between fault lines and stories of the supernatural. And I don't know how much of that I agree with.
Or draw lines or whatever they're called that connect the world, those?
Fault lines.
Yeah.
Well, but places like and a Bixby's Ghost, which is a mineral light, probably. I mean, that was one of the explanations for it, or ball lightning or something. And it's interesting that, okay, you've got this may be a natural phenomenon, not a supernatural.
Right.
But they connected it to a violent event involving Hannah Bixby. And they always say, well, this light, which was described one time by someone who saw it, as like the size of a wash tub.
And you know what? There are parallels to that story, John. One in Carterville of a blacksmith who was robbed, a saddle bag full of silver thrown into the strip pit pond there that, glows or something along that line. I've heard this story before in other connotations.
Yeah. These are the type of stories that just repeat over and over.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to do a talk on the 29th of October at 3 p.m. On the square in Marion about the history of the square, which ironically includes a lot of murder and mayhem.
Oh, yeah.
Appropriate Halloween, as well as sitting on pumpkins. That's a story which I would suggest people bring their own lawn chairs because they're far more comfortable.
Good. Hey, John, really, what time is that? On what day again?
3 p.m. Thursday. On the square, in the circle itself.
On the 29th.
On October 29th.
That square story, when you read Bloody Williamson, I have a hard time envisioning the garage that was there where the shootings. I mean, there was a lot of things that happened on the Marion Square that I think I was, especially once I moved from Saline County into Jackson County and now living in Williamson, now that I'm kind of and I realize Marion's got this really incredible history involving with this. I think so much of it in Heron, but Marion's involved there quite a bit too. Before I let you go, there's something you brought up a couple of minutes ago, and I want to touch on it again. Were you talking about the Hart brothers, Craven yes. Rock?
Yes, our frontier serial killers.
These guys were monsters. Little Harp and Big Harp, right?
Yeah. They killed at least 40 people over a 10-month period starting in December 1798 at that point in the Cumberland Gap. But then from Tennessee, Kentucky area, and as far west as what's now Hardin County, Illinois.
The pirates of Caven Rock.
Yeah.
You know, I hesitate to say this, but the one story about the Little Harp grabbing a baby and when it was crying and killing it, I'm going to leave out the gruesome details.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, if there's some place haunted, it would be that place. I always envision that because they used to tie these guys onto their horses backwards and then run them off the cliff above Caven Rock into the ocean after they'd robbed them, or into the ocean, into the river.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And once you read what these guys do, you're like, holy cow, these guys
These people were bad enough that even the pirates threw them out.
Yeah, so bad the pirates told them to get out. They had their own gang.
I've been interviewed on and talking about the Harps, and it's like, you know, if there was ever a figure from American history that was possessed, you know, Big Harp would be on the top of my list.
See, and I thought it was Little Harp.
I think Big Harp was the worst. Little Harp lasted the longest.
So he got more bad stuff done cumulatively. Okay.
Yeah. And I like it. When he was finally captured and executed, he was hung until dead, and once dead, his head was cut off.
Oh, so he had a fan club.
Yeah. Well, that was part of the judicial order. It was like a double execution. There was two people being executed, but they both were hung and then heads chopped off. They didn't want to take chances.
They didn't want to take any chances. There's a lot of fascinating history. Not all of it involves ghosts, but you see quite a lot of it. I'm reading a new Charlie Berger book now that I'm pretty fascinated with. It's written in first person, kind of like The Dame of Shawneetown. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Hard to find that book. Hard to find that anymore. Although if anybody could find it, it'd be John. Before I let you go, we've only got 30 seconds, John. Are you working on a new book?
I'm doing some writing. I'm still working on a book about Southern Illinois in the 1920s. And I'm looking at possibility of doing another anthology like I've done before with different stories. I'd love to do some type of monster book. There are some really, which may go into the anthology. There are some rivers. Talking about fake news. St. Louis newspapers in the 1870s and 80s were talking about river monsters in the Mississippi, and I think they were each trying to one-up the other.
Yep.
It's all different newspapers, but it gets to the point where it's a dragon, and they just don't use the D word.